Hello and welcome to ASP Conf. This is Chandar Dhal, and today we're going to talk about hands-on JavaScript. That's my email and my Twitter. However, if you search me on Google, you should be able to get to me. For years now, we've seen this debate over and over again. Is JavaScript good or bad? And there have been very valid reasons behind the debate, especially enterprise applications. It is easy to make mistakes if a third-party JavaScript code needs to be added to a website. The vendor can add some JavaScript code that can break the rest of the code. However, we know that this is partially true. Like any other language, JavaScript has its good and bad parts. Unfortunately, the bad ones have been making more news than the good ones. However, with the advent of HTML5 and a lot of different devices and gadgets in the market that support browsers, JavaScript has become the epicenter of development. In less words, JavaScript cannot be ignored. This talk is primarily focused on developers who come from the world of static languages like C# and Java. It's a bit of adjustment that is required to understand how JavaScript works. And once the conflicting principles are dealt with, JavaScript becomes a fun language. The goal of this talk is to highlight some of these cases. If you venture into JavaScript after years of experience in static languages like C# or Java, you would realize that intuitiveness is quite a cultural concept. In fact, to such an extent that what JavaScript developers would call as intuitive, you may call it as a bad coding practice. However, after some time, you'll find it as intuitive as they do, and we'll see some examples where this makes sense. One of the good examples is functions. In case of C#, we have methods, classes, and constructors. And in case of JavaScript, everything is a function. Or to be more specific, a function works as all the above. Let's take, in this example, type inference happens on the fly. And that's why we use the keyword var, similar to the one we used in C#. The second line, where we initialize a name variable, is quite a legal line of code. The only difference is that it's a global variable regardless of the scope. Both of these can be global variables, depending on the scope, and we will talk about this a little later. Nonetheless, internally in JavaScript, all variables are assigned to an undefined value before they are initialized. And this is regardless of where they are declared in the code. I'm going to create a function, and I'm just going to call it my function. And it's a simple function. All that does is returns my name. And I'm going to load it to see what the value is. So once I run this, I can see that the value passed back is my name. So if you notice that this is a global variable like we talked about. So in this case, what I'm going to do is alert this global variable. And I can see that this is the value that gets passed from my function. And this one is the global variable name. So I can see both the values getting back to me. Now, just to let you know that if I had not called the function first, the name value would not show up because this line of code never gets executed. So I'm going to put back the question name. And I'm not going to go return anything because I don't want an alert on something like this. So I'll just go ahead and remove it, call the function, and that way I have access to the name. I And if I run this, I do get the name back. If I add a var in front of it, I do not get the name back. Now, why is that? The moment I put a var in front of it, it gives it the function scope. So there's only one kind of scope in JavaScript. It's called function scope. Anything outside the function becomes a global variable if it is declared with a var. Inside the function, it becomes a local variable, local to that function. Let's take a variation of this case. So I'm going to remove all this code, add some of the scripts that I've already written. One of them is add, and one of them is original. Just to look into it, one of them says var name equals to hello, and the other one says var name equals to Chandar. Great. So what we're going to do is remove this and just alert the variable name, as this is a global variable. So once we run this, we get my name back. The moment we shift the order and run this again, we get hello back. And so you see the problem is that it really depends where you include your add script. The moment you add your script, it overwrites the name because name is a global variable. So that's a bit of a concern here. So now let's take another case where I have a global variable and I'm just going to call it global and alert the value. Once I do that, I'm going to go delete this variable. And then alert the value again. So we see the value 1, and then we see the value 1, so it did not get deleted. Well, okay, so why is that? So the moment I remove var from this, and I reload this, now we can see the value has been deleted. So if I inspect this element, it's going to say global is not defined because now it got deleted. So the moment we remove var, we are able to delete the global variable. So that's one very important thing to remember, is that we should be able to remove or delete these variables. Otherwise, this will always stick around in the memory even though we know we don't need them. The next thing to keep in mind is that JavaScript does not have a block scope. All it does have is a function scope. And it's important to know that since it's only going to have function scope, the blocks really do not matter at all. So let's see an example where this makes some sense. So if I come in here and create a function again, like what I had, well, the first thing you might notice is that I didn't have to create the name of a function. I can just create a function. So if I have a function like this, and I go ahead and say I have an ID, 123, and I have a name, create my global, which is going to be var global, and then I can access it right here. So once I call this function, I should be able to access the global variable. So once I call this function, I should be able to access the global variable, which is great. So now, how about using the same global variable inside and creating a local one and overriding this to my name? So if I run this, I get undefined on the first one, and I do get chandar on the second one. Now that this is a little bit surprising, but if you remember how JavaScript works. So what it does is the moment you initialize a variable, something like this, it will actually go on top of the function scope and create a line of code like this. So var global equals to undefined gets created right there. This particular value overrides this global value, and now we have undefined right here. That's why when we call it right here, it does not take the global value. And this is one other thing that we need to be careful about, because if you compare it with C, C would not let you define something like that here. You have to define it before you do anything else. So you have to declare all the variables right on top. So you at least have to declare them, and then you can initialize them later. In the case of JavaScript, what you can do is you can define it and declare it wherever you want, but definition actually does happen on top of the function. It's basically the first line to get executed right there. And this scenario is called hoisting, and it's a bit of a problem, and we should be very careful when we write JavaScript code in order to make sure that we do not get to something like this. So let's talk about another scenario of initializing values. So I could have had name equals to something crazy like first name and whatever, and I'm gonna go ahead and remove rest of it, which is not important. Once I do this, I want to be able to declare my name, and that should technically fail because I am actually, this is not a global variable, because if you see the function scope, I'm declaring it inside a function. So let's run this. So if I run this, I do get hello, and then I get chandar. And the reason I'm getting hello is because hello was part of add. So I should go ahead and change this to something else. I'm going to call this my name, and I'm going to change it to my name. So if I run this, I do get an error and nothing runs. Why? Because my name really doesn't exist. So I'm going to go ahead and remove this to see what we get in case of first name. And if you see, first name actually gives me the value back, which is chandar. Now why is that? If you're coming from a C, C++, C sharp background, you're gonna think that my name and first name are really equal to chandar, so both of them should be local to this scope, which is not actually the case. So in case of JavaScript, the first value is defined with a var and the second one is not, and that's why it becomes a global variable. So this is one very important major concept that we need to remember when we work with JavaScript. So now let's take the discussion to functions, and functions are the most important inside JavaScript. If you remember the previous discussion, there's no classes, there are no methods, there are no constructors. Everything is a function. They can be passed as an argument to another function, and then you could be running that same particular function. Now, this is something like anonymous types. You've seen a lot of that code in lambdas if you do C sharp. And the functions can be returned from a function too. So you can have a function returning a function, and then you can execute that function. And then it can be assigned to a variable that could be used later. So let's look into functions. Let's take another example of a function where the function returns a name. And let's make sure that it runs. So I do get the name back. Now if you come from a C sharp background, you might be tempted to do something like this. And if we run this again, really nothing happens. We do not get the value back. Now why is that? It says cannot read property name of undefined. This part is pretty interesting. One of the reasons developers like this language is also because it's not picky about the syntax. For example, semicolons. It's okay to forget them at times. So if you forget to add a semicolon, it will look for the appropriate line break and add one for you. In this case, it does add a semicolon right here. However, this semicolon ends up changing the semantics of the code. In fact, it's silly. If you observe this with a developer's eye, the lines following the return statement do not even matter, as those are unreachable lines of code. Nevertheless, the simple rule of thumb is to just follow Visual Studio's guidelines on parentheses if there's a confusion. So let's take a few more examples, but before that, let me go ahead and remove these because we don't need them anymore. So let's take an example. We get this all the time. We have products and then we gotta pick one by the ID. So in this case, we're gonna keep it simple, create an array. And add some products. The next step could be getting to these products like this and just putting in an index. I'm just gonna add 3. So when I run this, I'm expecting to see the third index, which is connect, which is actually translates to the fourth one because it's an array 0, 1, 2, 3, 4. Now this is okay, but we've already talked about this, that if I have a global variable, I'm gonna get into trouble if someone else comes in and adds a product's global variable, because there are chances that this would be overwritten. Well, so a simple fix to this problem is creating a function around this and call it maybe getProduct. So if I have a getProduct, I am gonna pass in my index and then change this to index. So now if I run getProduct with the index that I want, I should be getting the same exact result, which I do. Here's another way you can work with it, and this is probably a more preferable method. So I do get office back. So now let's use some object-oriented principles and make this code a little bit cleaner. So the first thing I'm gonna do is create a function which is going to be a class. So if you look into C#, this is how we would define a constructor. So think of this constructor as a class right now. And I'm gonna call this products variable with a this keyword, which really means the function scope as of now. So I have this.products, which has all the values. And then the next thing I'm going to do is this.getProducts, which could be a function that really takes in the index. And for now, all it does is returns products corresponding to the index that I'm going to pass it in. Now this property is called closure. The property of a function to be able to use a variable that was in the outer scope. Now if you look at products, products is in the scope of the function product, and the function getProducts can use the products variable inside it. So no matter what happens, you will be able to use that value. So that's a very important concept in closure. In fact, it's one of those things that makes classes happen in JavaScript. The next step would be to go ahead and new this and say, okay, I have a product instance, and I want to new the constructor, pass in the value 3, and then the next thing I want to do is call product dot get products. This should technically not work, and let's see why. So if I run this program, we get an error, and that should be products is not defined, which is right, because the only way to access this is using this dot products. And that makes sense because it's inside that class scope, and we talked about closure, and it makes sense that in order to access this, you should be using the keyword this in this function. And it works. Another way of doing this could have been using object literals. So if I use parentheses in my return statement to pass a key value pair of something like get product and return a function, which really takes in an index and returns the corresponding product. And once I call the function, I'm going to call get product and pass in the index, which is 2 in this case. Sorry, the name of the function was getProduct. So if I run this, I get the value back. So the first question that comes to your mind when you look at this, when I say that product is a class, well, how do you inherit from it? Well, so let's look into an example where it makes more sense. So I'm going to go and define another function, let's say employee, which is more like my employee class, and I want to pass in my name. So anytime someone calls this constructor, the name is set. So something like this. Well, so the next thing I want to do is add a function on it because I want to inherit from it. So I'm going to call employee dot prototype dot change name. Just keeping it simple because all we have on the employee is just one property. So if I have something like that, I would go, okay, this dot name equals to name. And let's see if this runs. So the first thing I might want to do is create an employee object and put my name in. And then the next thing I might want to do is say employee dot change name, and you see IntelliSense picks it up in Visual Studio 2010, and I added my name and it changed to dull, and then I'm gonna go alert employee dot name. So if I run this, we see that we get a new updated name. Now this is more like extension methods. We can use it on something which is inbuilt in JavaScript, like a date function or a string function or anything like that. But it does give us the ability to extend the class, and it's a little more elegant. Now, what that might mean is I can create a class with all these properties, and then depending on the functions, I'll just go ahead and add those using the prototype. As we all know, that functions are more than just a function in this language. So let's talk about some cases that can get confusing. First thing to keep in mind is that functions are really not functions. They are technically objects. And these objects have methods. So every function comes with some methods that apply to instances of these functions, such as call and apply. The keyword this behaves differently than its counterpart in C#. The this keyword changes scope based on the type of function. For example, if it's just called in a function that is called directly without creating an instance, it takes the value of the global object. So if you are doing this in a DOM, it's going to take the value of the object window. Now, if it is called with an instance scope, it takes the value of that particular instance. Let's look into some examples. Let's take a function called outer and give it a property this.name equals to outer. And let's just alert this scope in here to see what it actually does. And then maybe have another function, which is an inner function, and alert the value of this and close this function. So if I call this function, I see the first object is window, the window object. And since I never called the second function, it actually doesn't do anything, which is okay. And it still is the window object, so not a problem. Well, let's create another function. I'm going to call it another class so that you can think of this as a constructor, even though there's really not any difference between both of these functions. But we're going to call it differently. So this is another class. And then we can have another function here, which this function can be called more like var a class equals to new another class, and I'm going to pass in the name, and then a class dot get name, and that's it. So if we run this function, we see we get the object window. And this one, both of these are same as the previous example. And now we see this is another class and it's an object. It's an object of type another class. And then we go further, we see there's another object for the nested function, which is called inside this class. So what made the difference? The difference was the new keyword. The way we called it, we created an instance. And when we created that instance got passed instead of the window object. So now let's take another example where I have something called var name object equals to name, and then I do an alert final call. So now what's the call function in this case? In this case, the function is nothing but something that returns this.name. Now we'll look into why we did it this way, but let's just run it. So when we run this, we're going to get the first two window objects, which is fine. Then we get the another class object, which is fine. And then we get the first final call, which is doll. And now I'm going to do the same thing, but call the function directly. So if I do this, I get the window objects, and then I get those objects. Then I get my first final call, which was doll. And now, when I get to the previous call, it actually gives me the value outer. Now, why is that? Because in this case, it's really taking the value from the Windows object. I know a lot of this gets confusing, but let's just see what we did here. So in the first case, we had function outer. Anything I do here, this keyword will take the value of the global object, which in this case, being inside a DOM, is going to be the window object. And when we talk about the another class, this is more to say that I made it capital to start with. The A here is capital, suggesting the other developer who is going to be using my code that whenever you call this, use it as a constructor. So create a named instance. So whenever the name instance got created, this turned to that particular instance. And we saw that. In the third case, we had a function called this.name. Now, the way we call it makes the whole difference. Now, this could be a scenario where you created a function and you wanted it to behave as a constructor, but you didn't really care much and you forgot to make it a capital letter, and then another guy comes and uses your function and he sees it as a regular function. So he calls it like something like this. So in this case, it's taking the value from the global object, which is the window object, and gives you the value outer. However, this was probably the right way of calling it, where you could have come in and passed in an object. And when you pass in that particular object or another instance of an object, and then you call that function, you get the value. Now, this is technically a right way of calling that function, because you want to be able to pass that particular instance that will give you the value in most of the cases, unless you want to work with global objects, which is not necessarily the best approach, and we've discussed that previously. So I think it's helpful to understand that how the keyword this works and how it changes scope. Now, there are two different ways you can call this function. You can use it calling call, and you can also use it calling apply. The only difference between call and an apply is that it takes an argument array. So if we go back into call, call just takes the arguments the way they are, and apply takes an argument array. So let's take an example where this actually makes sense. So I'm gonna go ahead and remove all this. For this to make sense, we would need some parameters. So I'm gonna add an A and a B, and then call the function. Call function not call. And pass in the name object, which is this, and then give it values like 1, 2, and that's it. For the moment, I'll change this to alert, this.name plus A plus B, and that should do it for us. So once I run this, all I get back is doll, 1, 2, which is okay. I could have done the same thing using apply. The only difference would be that this becomes an array. So you can pass all the arguments as an array, and the same code should run. And it does. So we see there's really not much difference, except that in one case you're passing in the arguments one by one, and the other one it's more like an array. And that's it. Now it's time to do something cool. Server-side JavaScript. How about taking the same MVC app we have and creating a call from the UI and bringing data back from the server? I'm going to use Node.js. If you haven't looked at Node.js, I recommend going to the Windows Azure website and downloading Node.js SDK. In my personal opinion, Azure is one of the best places to host Node.js applications, as I haven't had much luck with many other hosting services. I'm assuming that you have Node.js installed on your machine. The best way to do it is to go to nodejs.org and use the installer on a Windows. Now, once you are inside the command prompt and you type in node, whatever you do after that is pure JavaScript. For example, 2 plus 2 is 4. I can go ahead and initialize a variable and then find what type that variable is of, and it tells me it's a number. Anything that I do here is regular pure JavaScript without the DOM elements. One of the big problems of JavaScript when we do concatenation is this. If you have a string and an int, JavaScript automatically converts into a string, which is okay, but what that means is that you always have to check the type of your data before you do the concatenation. Let's try something else where we may want to go ahead and add 2 decimal points, and I'm going to check if this is equal to 0.3. Well, we do get an invalid keyword error. In this case, all we have to do is make sure we have 0 in front of it and then do the check. It's actually false. Now, why is that? Well, that's because it's JavaScript. That's because JavaScript is also taking into account the zeros behind it. So it's not really doing, now when you convert binary into decimal, it's really not a perfect match. So it's not doing some kind of round off. So it's really getting up to that 4 you see right after so many zeros after 3. And that's why it's giving you that error. So you have to be very careful when you do JavaScript mathematics, because it may not necessarily be what you actually see. Let's see something else. So 11 is less than 5. That's a false, and we all know that. However, if the type that was returned was a string, and now this could be a string not because you intended it to be a string. It could also be a string just because something happened to that data before it came back. Well, now you see it's a true because it's taking it as a string, and 1 comes before 5. There's a concept of not a number in JavaScript, and that's called NaN. The funny thing is that if you equate NaN to itself, it actually is a false. And even the worst part, if you say NaN not equals to NaN, well, that's actually true. Same goes with infinity. Infinity is more like saying max number, and max number plus 1 is also max number, which is infinity. So there are certain of these things that appear to be very funny for someone who comes from a C-sharp background. However, that's how JavaScript is. But this is all important to know. Well, we're not going to get distracted by this. I'm going to move to creating the Node.js part of things, where we will take JavaScript from the UI and go to the server. Let's clear everything and move on to creating the API. Now think of Restify. We're going to use a framework Restify. Think of Restify as web API. First thing you got to do is npm install Restify. What's npm? npm is Node Package Manager. Think of npm as NuGet. Once we have Restify, we can start coding our application. I'm going to go ahead and create. So if you look at the directory, it creates something called node modules and gets Restify for me. And I have a file called test.js over there. As of now, it's an empty file. Our first statement is going to be making sure that we do have the module referenced inside our code. Think of this as an import statement in C#. Then I'm going to create a function, respond, which takes a request, it takes a response, and next. Next really means what do I do next after I'm done with all my functions. It could mean going to a new function, like something that is a formatter, or anything else you would want to do to your response before you get to the user. All I'm saying is send back, take my query string, take the parameters, and if there is a parameter called name, take that value and add hello in front of it, and that's it. Define my server. Now that's how simple it is to create a web server in Node. Once I create my server, I'm going to say if you get, for for a parameter called name, I'm going to pass in the function respond. We've already discussed that functions are first-class citizens in JavaScript. And same thing in case of my head. Now, I don't have to do all this, but it's good to see how this works. This is the port number, and I'm giving it a random port number of 8144. You could also make it 8080, which is quite standard. The next thing is I'm going to pass in a message saying my server is listening at the following URL. Now, if you're using WebMetrix, you'll probably get IntelliSense for most of it. But as of now, I'm just trying to do it on Notepad, and that's it. So if I go back here and say no test, I can see that my server is now listening. So what do I do next? The next thing would be to create the UI and make sure that I can get the data back on my UI. So what I'm going to do is take an input, and in this case, I'm going to take a text box, which can take the input, and I'm going to call it text data. And then I need to have a div to add my result into. And in this case, I'm going to call it result. And then I'll have a button. And when I click this button, I need to be able to bring my data back. So I'll call it get data, and value is get data. Now it's time to make a JavaScript call, and I'm going to use jQuery, a popular JavaScript library, cross-browser, and makes it easy to do a lot of things. If you don't know what jQuery is, do check out jQuery.com. I'm going to make a GET request, because all I'm doing is bringing data back. And if I remember the URL correctly, it's going to be localhost 8144 then slash, and then I would like to add the data. In order to get the data, I know it's in the text data text box. I'm going to use the val method. It's a jQuery method that gives you the data back. And on success, I'm going to have a function that takes data, and all it does is alerts the data so that we know that the data came back from the server. That's it. Pretty simple. Now you can do a lot of fun stuff with it, but we're going to make it very simple for now. So once this is done, I can run this and make sure that this works. So if I run this, I get back data hello undefined and why. And I forgot to add the hash symbol in front of. And now if I run this and hit get data, I get back hello Chandar, and that's it. So we see that how we were able to go from our UI to the server and server return the data back. Now this could have been done through the controller too. I'm not saying that this is a good way to do things, obviously not. Now you could have used your controller, made a request to the Restify server and brought things back. But this is just to show you how JavaScript code works from the UI all the way back to the server. If you want to check out some links, you can go to my blog online, and I have some blog posts about how to use SQL Server with Node.js. If you actually just search that on Google, you're going to find my blog, and that's a better way to get to it. It shows you how you can use JSON results coming back from your SQL Server and use the Restify framework to bring back data onto your UI. More resources. There are some really good books on JavaScript. The ones I like the best are JavaScript Patterns. It does give you, it's a small book, and it does give you a lot of things that you would not otherwise come across usually.
JavaScript, the definitive guide, obviously is like the Bible of JavaScript, but it's a big book. So I use it more as a reference. JavaScript, the Good Parts, is written by Crockford, and I'm a big fan of that book. And if you want to use a tool to take all your JavaScript code and test it, I think Crockford did a really good job creating JS Lint. Now, this, in his own words, is going to break your feelings. However, this is a real good tool to make sure that you're writing good code. I've hardly seen this tool fail at all. That's all for today. Welcome to ASP Conf. That's my email and my Twitter. Please do send me your feedback. Thanks.